Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and we have a great conversation lined up today for our theme this week, the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer, Give Us This Day Our Daily Bread, and we're going to talk about that. What does this mean? God certainly gives daily bread to everyone without our prayers, even to all evil people, but we pray in this petition that God would lead us to realize this and to receive our daily bread with thanksgiving. What is meant by daily bread? Well, daily bread includes everything that has to do with the support and needs of the body, such as food, drink, clothing, shoes, house, home, land, animals, money, goods, a devout husband or wife, devout children, devout workers, devout and faithful rulers, good government, good weather, peace, health, self-control, good reputation, good friends, faithful neighbors, and the like. Well, we're going to talk about a topic related to that, very much so related to that. Refugee Sunday that's coming up this summer, and you might be your congregation might be looking at observing that on in June around the 22nd, but you could observe that at any time. We're going to talk about it with our friends from Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and the Reverend Bart Day, Executive Director of the Office of National Mission here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there, and click on that. That'll take you to their page. You can find out all about the programs they have to offer and where they're located. Well, joining me in studio today, the Reverend Bart Day from the Office of National Mission at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and also Executive Committee member for Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, is member-at-large of the Executive Committee. Good morning, Pastor Day.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us in studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us by phone today, Tara Mulder. She is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services. Good morning, Tara.
Good morning.
Thanks for being our guest today.
My pleasure.
Refugee Sunday is coming up this summer. I've heard a little bit about it. Is this something new, Tara?
Yes, it is something new.
You're celebrating, what, 75 years this year of work that the LIRS has been around for 75 years doing its work.
Yes, Refugee Sunday is a new way that we're celebrating our work, in particular for the 75th anniversary this year.
And so why Refugee Sunday? What is Refugee Sunday all about?
Refugee Sunday is a chance to stop for a moment and praise God for amazing ministry that's been happening for 75 years with migrants and refugees. Lutherans have a lot to be proud of in the way they've welcomed migrants and refugees and made them part of their congregations and communities. It's a chance to celebrate that, to learn more, and hopefully get even more involved.
Well, and you bring up a good point, welcoming new Americans, welcoming refugees to become new Americans. Why is it important that we welcome new Americans? Why is that important? We'll start with Tara and then we'll go to Bart.
Well, for migrants and refugees in particular, it's not just a nice thing. It's actually often the difference between life and death. We're talking about people who cannot go home because only violence and death await them. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people for whom emigrating to another country is actually a form of humanitarian relief.
Bart, why is it important for us to welcome these new Americans, migrants, refugees? Why is it important to be welcoming to them?
Well, the things Tara has said are certainly critical and true and should never be forgotten. But for us in the church, there is the fact that our Lord Jesus is inviting us to see all the human race as one, mm-hmm. that we are one people, that he opens doors and gives us many of marvelous opportunities to the church to care for the needs of people while also sharing the gospel with them. So I think welcoming new Americans is important to the church because oftentimes these people may have church contacts in their countries where they're coming from, mm-hmm. and they're looking for that here, and that's not necessarily an easy connection to make. And churches are wonderful communities of welcome where they can care for their human needs, help address language issues, help them acclimate, help mentor them to find jobs and all kinds of wonderful things. But the one thing the church can do that no social service agency will do is share the gospel of Jesus Christ with those people. And that's the marvelous opportunity for the church. I think it's why the LCMS has stepped up, wants to especially celebrate the 75th anniversary, because as Tara said, there is a lot of wonderful history there. Mm-hmm. And I've shared on some of the shows with Rod that wonderful history beginning back right after the war. But that has changed over time, and there are wonderful opportunities today, especially with children that are coming across now. needs for foster care and adoption, so the church can play a wonderful role in supporting the body of Christ, specifically in this way with immigrants and refugees.
What are the conditions that many people are facing that lead them to the circumstances and the conditions they're facing that lead them to want to migrate to the United States? Natera?
Violent persecution, war, whether it's a civil war or other kinds of armed conflict, often it's an eruption of a combination of tensions. Tension over religion, ethnicity, nationality, politics, or a membership in another social group. Those are actually the five grounds necessary to qualify to be a refugee or to qualify as an asylum seeker. And sometimes, in some countries, this is a quiet conflict and persecution is aimed at individuals. And sometimes it erupts into war, as we see in Syria today.
And so they're seeking to get away from, as you said, danger, sometimes political situations. It could be something horribly traumatic, but as you said, it could be something really quiet, too.
Absolutely. It can be the upheaval of one person's world, or it might be an entire nation.
Mm-hmm. And Tara might be able to share more, but I think that the large number of unaccompanied, undocumented children who are coming now from South Latin America, those changes there politically, especially where people who were in rural communities in the past had kind of safety away from the violence of the city or the drugs or the gangs in the city. That's now permeating everywhere and making even very young children fear for their lives, so much so that they would make such a long trek just to try to get away and find something better.
How many refugees resettle in the U.S. each year?
For the last few years, it's been about 70,000, 10,000 of which are resettled by LIRS. It's actually a fraction of the number of people that are in refugee camps today, which is upwards of 10 million.
Wow. And so why so many? Why are there so many people that are coming to the United States, coming to resettle here in the U.S.?
War, persecution, and situations as Bart described in Central America, where there's been a complete failure of government to protect their people from all kinds of abuses. So for people's very survival, for their very lives, they're finding it necessary to cross a border into another country for safety and eventually into another country to actually rebuild their lives.
And how is the number of refugees that are admitted to the United States, how is that determined? I mean, you know, with so many, you know, that's just a vast number. How do we decide?
It is. It's actually a decision that the president makes every year. It's the presidential determination is how we refer to it. And it's made in consultation with a lot of leaders and in observance of a lot of factors, from capacity to the economy to the job market, as well as the urgent need for millions of people to find a new home. It's been about 70,000 for the last few years. Prior to 9/11, it was actually more than 100,000 a year and dropped off dramatically, of course, after 9/11, and is just now getting back to numbers that are more reflective of our history as a country of refuge.
Does and you said that the president makes that decision, but it certainly takes into consideration information from various, is informed by various agencies, and is LIRS involved in it? Do you contribute to any of that information?
We do have a voice in that process. We advocate actively with the administration and with Congress to make sure that the United States upholds our commitment to being a champion for migrants and refugees. We help inform about the situation that people are in, different conflicts across the country, and really what's involved in helping refugees make a new start so that appropriate budget decisions can be made to follow that determination.
So that's a pretty big... LIRS is really quite influential and accomplishing quite a bit. I mean, almost what you said, 70,000 people come into the country, and LIRS assists how many? Was it 10,000 a year?
It's about 10,000, and that's just the numbers of refugees who are coming through the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program. We also serve people who are in detention. They may be refugees for all intents and purposes, but they actually apply for protection after they come to the United States, so they're an asylum seeker. And we also help a large number of children coming on their own through separate programs. They might be refugee children coming from overseas, and they might be children, as Bart mentioned, from Central America that are coming to the U.S. alone for safety or to find family.
And I haven't been on the board very long, but and Tara can share more about this, but the number of 10,000 that are helped and come in through LIRS, through the resettlement program, it's pretty amazing that there are not very many organizations that exist that are at that table with the federal government when those decisions are being made on which organizations are going to help in the actual resettlement. So it is a very relatively small number of players at the table. And LIRS, I believe, is the second or third largest that actually provides that support in conjunction with the federal government.
Are the other agencies or organizations affiliated with churches, or are they more or other types of organizations?
Both. So there are nine organizations that resettle refugees in the United States. A number of them are faith-based, like LIRS. The Episcopal Church has the Episcopal Migration Ministries. There are other organizations that are founded by a group of denominations together. World Relief, for example, was founded by the Association of Evangelical Churches in the United States. And there are a few organizations that are not faith-based. They're simply secular humanitarian organizations like the International Rescue Committee. And there are some that are actually founded by former refugees themselves.
So LIRS really plays a big part in helping new Americans. We're not just talking about some small social agency that's helping a few people. We're talking a large group of people. Yet, how many, Bart, from your perspective, how many congregations really know about LIRS and what LIRS does?
I would say very few. But I think the number is growing.
Sure.
And this is why the 75th anniversary is, we hope, a prime opportunity to allow congregations to begin to see the varied opportunities that they have to support immigrants and refugees in their own communities and the way the church can play a role. So I would say historically, the LCMS has not been a major player. I think ELCA congregations have been much more engaged. But the door is wide open for the LCMS and our congregations to be there and to work and support. And many of them are. But I think overall, it's a pretty small number that we would like to see. We would like to see grow. And LIRS's part in that is that they can provide some wonderful resources and support to congregations. They can help congregations kind of navigate that world. Talking to a congregation about going to start to do detention visitation can be a bit overwhelming, and LIRS can provide help and support and some training to those people so that they understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, how it's done. So LIRS is a great partner for us in that.
Detention visitation. It sounds like you're stuck after school.
I think it's a lot worse than just being stuck after school.
We'll get to that in a little bit. What is it about the whole transition that the average person doesn't know about, you know, fleeing your home country and coming to the United States, seeking refuge here? What is it about that whole transition, about that process, that the average person probably just doesn't know? I mean, Tara, can you give us an idea, paint that picture for us?
Sure. There are a lot of challenges that people might expect refugees face when they're rebuilding their lives, and some they might not. Refugees do come with a permanent legal residence status, and they're eligible to work in the United States. A lot of people don't know that refugees have to repay their travel loan. that was provided to transport them from the refugee camp to the United States. So financial self-sufficiency is priority number one when refugees arrive. Some of the things people might expect, some of the challenges people might expect include the culture shock, gaining proficiency in the language. A lot of refugees know at least a little bit of English before they come. Some are proficient in English as well as multiple languages. And there's a lot of just navigating U.S. systems, from healthcare to the local school system.
And that's not always easy, even for those of us who grew up in this culture.
It's not. I mean, just think of the last time you moved from another state or another city. There's upheaval in your whole life. There's physical and emotional toll. And then imagine all of those things you had to do to rebuild your life and connect in your new community, but you're doing it because you've been forced, because you literally cannot go home.
Hmm. And I think I would add just one thing, and Tara can perhaps expand on this too. The work of LIRS, and there have been conversations at the board about this, that the federal dollars that LIRS gets and helps to do that work of support is for a relatively short period of time. And we know that it takes a long time to welcome and integrate immigrants. And this is the power of congregations to be able to do that. So we've had a lot of conversations at LIRS, and there's been a lot of listening groups around the country, I believe, to talk about what does the long welcome look like, mm-hmm. and how can LIRS help to extend that care and love and support. And I don't believe it's going to come through federal dollars and tax-funded programs. A lot of the length and the ability to really stay with people for a long time is going to come from the congregations and the local churches in their community. And so that's a powerful piece that congregations and our members can play.
What it sounds like you're saying is it doesn't necessarily come specifically through programs, through a structure, but rather through those relationships that are built, the people and the connections that are made with people who live here in the United States, specifically the congregations, when they make that connection with refugees, that long-term stuff is what happens in the relationships. That long-term support is what's there through those relationships that happen with the volunteers, the congregations.
Absolutely. And I don't want to downplay the programmatic pieces mm-hmm. that are all very, very important, but I think you're exactly correct. The programmatic pieces will only go so long, and
sure.
they will only last for a certain period of time, and then there's still going to need to be the support, and it's going to come from the relationships that they've built, mm-hmm. particularly with congregation members who can help and support and love them for long periods of time.
Yeah, the program and structure, the organizations, the programs, the structure, all that are necessary in order to make those processes happen. But yeah, the long range, it's more than a program. It's,
right.
it's got to be that connection with people.
And Tara may have some stuff to say about that too, about lengthening the welcome.
You guys are absolutely right on. The resettlement program itself lasts about 3 to 6 months when people are getting assistance. With refugee status, people can access other public benefits up to 5 years, but it doesn't go very far, as you guys have said very well. We have learned that it takes an average of about 7 years for a family to repay their travel loan, and that has been a marker of financial independence for families. It often enables them to establish credit and to buy a home. So we get to hear wonderful stories from people who ask for a credit reference when they're trying to buy a home or tell us about the success that they've achieved that also enabled them to repay this loan so that there's more money to help newly arriving refugees. That's always a beautiful thing to witness. But it really does come down to the congregation. Families are more successful at a faster rate when congregations get involved, and they're more deeply rooted in the community when congregations are involved. I hear stories all the time about people who, from congregations who tell me about a family that they welcomed back in the 70s, and they're still in touch. They might still be part of their congregation or at least corresponding, and these relationships really weave people into the fabric of our nation and not just treat them as somebody who needs help.
And that's really the reality for all of us in the church. We're all really strangers and aliens uh-huh. and outsiders. And so what we're able to offer immigrants and refugees coming to the United States within the church is the very thing that we ourselves are receiving from being a part of the church, this cohesive body of Christ that is there to love and support and help us in ways that the world cannot.
And you mentioned earlier, Bart, that the one thing that the church can do that other organizations are not going to do is not only extend a welcoming hand, but also to welcome in the name of Christ, to tell the good news of Jesus, the church can deliver the good gifts of God in word and sacrament that you're not going to find elsewhere. That's what the church is about, is delivering those good gifts. But not just as we see in the scriptures, stay warm and well-fed and be on your way sort of thing, but not just telling them about Jesus, but also being merciful. Both, it's witness and mercy together that we're delivering.
Absolutely, and that's been for us in the LCMS over the last couple of decades. Maybe it's fair to say a bit of a theological shift for us, and it has brought challenges in our work domestically and around the world that we do not tend to see the act of mercy itself, the cup of cold water or the food or the garment. We do not see those things as the gospel. We need to proclaim the gospel to those people. And the very reason that we care for them and love them and show them that mercy in those tangible ways is because we are being ourselves compelled by the gospel and Christ in us. So you're right on. I mean, the things that we want to do, the people with whom we want to partner, the organizations that we want to support, we're doing those things because it's giving our members and our congregations the opportunity to extend the mercy of Christ with the content of the gospel.
We're not just doing them to be just to be neighborly or just because it's the thing you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's not just the just and moral thing to do. It is those things,
right?
But there's more to those things also.
Absolutely.
And that's part of the beauty of walking alongside migrants and refugees through service as a volunteer. A lot of refugees are Christians. We have to remember that. A lot of people have been persecuted for their faith or witnessed violence over their faith. So I like to encourage congregations that when they are faithful in service and faithful in relationship, the Holy Spirit will provide opportunities to witness.
We're discussing the upcoming Refugee Sunday with Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service here at Worldwide KFUO today. We're talking with the Reverend Bart Day, Executive Director of the Office of National Mission for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and LIRS Executive Committee Member at Large, and also talking with Tara Mulder, LIRS Director for Marketing and Communications. We need to take a break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue the conversation about Refugee Sunday right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
For the second year in a row, Thrivent Financial for Lutherans is proud to have been named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute. This recognition is given to organizations that go beyond making statements about doing business ethically and translate those words into action. Why Thrivent Financial? As a Christian membership organization, our shared values guide everything we do. When you work with us, you can be sure we strive to take great care to act responsibly and with integrity. To learn more, check us out at thrivent.com.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
There's a huge church in New York City called Greater Allen AME Cathedral of New York. It has 23,000 members and is led by a husband-wife team, Reverends Elaine and Floyd Flake. Mrs. Flake was recently made aware of the grave abortion statistics regarding the black community in New York City. Black babies are more likely to be aborted than to be born. Her eyes were also open to the reality that many of her members are likely struggling with a past abortion. If churches across America wake up and activate against abortion, especially black churches, because their community is being targeted by the abortion industry, we will see an end to this modern-day Holocaust. If your pastor doesn't address abortion from the pulpit, ask him to. It's urgent.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, this is Rod Zwanitzer, KFUO's director, asking you to join us for Share-a-thon 2014, April 24th through the 26th. During Share-a-thon, we'll have many special guests and share how KFUO has touched the lives of our listeners with this Christ-centered message. Also during Share-a-thon, we'll ask you for your support and share with you how your gifts will help KFUO share the gospel of Jesus with a world that so desperately needs him. Please prayerfully consider making a gift this year during Share-a-thon 2014 and celebrate the ministry with us Thursday and Friday, April 24th and 25th from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and on Saturday, April 26th, 7 a.m. till noon. We are the messenger of good news, worldwide KFUO.
Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth across the room to a speaker system in your home or listen on radios that have built-in smartphone cradles. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the clear gospel message of Christ crucified for our sins. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Christians worldwide have celebrated their belief that Jesus Christ rose from the dead after dying on the cross to pay for sins. The Southern Baptist Convention's public policy chief says,
"That sounds odd and that sounds strange." Well, of course it does. Well, we believe that a previously dead man is now the ruler of the universe and offers forgiveness of sins to anyone who will repent and believe. That's the same sort of reaction that happened in the Greco-Roman Empire when Christianity first emerged.
The Reverend Russell Moore told ABC's This Week it used to be that in America,
one had to nominally at least be a member of a church. Those days are over. And so we're at a point now where Christianity is able to be authentic, and Christianity is able to be authentically strange.
President Barack Obama and his family attended an Easter service in Washington. In a White House statement, Obama said he and the First Lady would reflect on the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made for us and rejoice in the triumph of the resurrection. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking with our friends from LIRS, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service, about the upcoming Refugee Sunday and what congregations can do to be supportive, to connect with and serve refugees and migrants, those who are seeking refuge here in the United States. So today we're talking with Reverend Bart Day, Executive Director of the Office of National Mission with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and LIRS Executive Committee Member at Large, and also talking with Tara Mulder, LIRS Director for Marketing and Communications. Before we went to break, we talked about the opportunities that congregations have to welcome new Americans, to speak the good news, to go hand in hand, good news and witness and mercy, to share the good news of Jesus and to be merciful, to care for their needs, help them walk side by side with them and welcome them into the community with whatever their needs might be. What are those things that congregations and families can do to be helpful, to be neighborly? Why local congregations? What are the things that need to happen when someone gets settled in that you or I can do as neighborly people? Tara?
Well, congregations can be involved in big ways, like helping an arriving family with almost all of their needs over the course of months, or they might be involved in one-off volunteering opportunities, like helping to set up an apartment or teaching English.
So all of those things are important aspects of getting settled in. You said they could be one-time things, they can be ongoing things. What's that process like, helping someone get settled in? I know in one of my former congregations, we worked with LIRS in helping a refugee get settled in the community, going through that process of getting an apartment, helping him and find a job. What does that process look like, Tara?
It can be really exciting. There, from the moment people arrive at the airport, there's a group of people from a church and the staff of the local resettlement office to welcome them. It's a really exciting moment, and taking them to their apartment or the home that's been set up for them for the first time, and helping them settle in, there's a real electricity about that arrival moment. And then there's some hard work in making sure that people are getting to different appointments and mm-hmm. classes and things like that. And just being a friend during this process to answer questions about everything from how a dishwasher works to the way the government works in the United States.
Well, I think in the Day household, they're still trying to teach Bart how to use the dishwasher, too. So
that's not the only thing they're still trying to teach me, unfortunately.
I'm just kidding. Well, so learning all those things, I could imagine coming to a new place, a new city, a new culture, and just trying to figure out the transportation system. You know, in some cities, driving a car is necessary. In other cities, they have great public transportation. Just making that transition alone can be overwhelming and confusing and maybe even frightening. Having someone to just help you with that alone, I think, would be significant.
It truly is. And the time spent together doing those mundane things, mm-hmm. like going to a doctor's appointment, are when relationships are built and lasting friendships are formed.
Absolutely. What are the top areas where Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service has been very active, where you have a strong connection and a lot of support? And then we'll talk about the areas where help is needed.
Absolutely. Well, there are probably the usual suspects across the country where there are lots of Lutherans, so the Twin Cities, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but also cities like Seattle and Phoenix, where there are Lutheran social ministries. Out of the 24 or so refugee resettlement partners that are in the LRS network, all but a few of them are Lutheran social ministries, and they all have robust local and regional networks and lots of services that make the resettlement that LIRS does, that Lutherans do, our whole Lutheran community, makes it even more successful.
So those are the big cities. Where are the places where perhaps we need some more development? We need to develop those networks and get going. Where are refugees coming that maybe we need to do more work?
Well, some of the work that can be done in communities is helping with attitudes and a welcoming spirit, sharing the gift of hospitality. When decisions are made about where refugees are placed, it's with a lot of consultation between the state, between the organizations, between local businesses, so that when refugee families are sent to a town, placed in a town, it's because there is an appropriate job market and capacity in the community to walk alongside people. What one challenge is that there are some Americans, of course, who are worried about this. They're worried about the scarcity of resources. They're worried about what people from another culture or how people from another culture may impact their community. I think it's important for all Lutherans to make sure that when immigration and refugees are the topic of conversation, that it's done with love and respect and with a reminder that as people of God, we are people who welcome.
So if were I a refugee coming from another country, I can't just say, oh, I want to go to this specific city in the United States because I heard that it's the land of opportunity and they have great jobs in this area. There's a process to it, and there are more factors that are considered into it than just saying, oh, I want to go to that city.
Yeah, absolutely. And the needs of the refugee family and any family ties they might already have in the United States are a significant factor. And we work hard to make sure that people are going to the place where they're going to be most successful because there are other people from their culture already there or the right services are in place for the needs that their family may have. We mentioned that the refugee resettlement program itself can be rather a short period, 3 to 6 months. Sometimes even before that time is over, families move to another city because of people they know or because there are even more people from their culture in that community and they think they can be more successful there.
So as a refugee, they have, going back to the process, meeting someone at the airport, being met at the airport, helping them get settled in that first few weeks, first month, a couple of months, with a home, and then, as you said, doctor's appointments and things like that. Where does it go from there? What's the picture look like from there in terms of, if we were talking about jobs, how does that process work?
Well, there are typically what we call job developers at our resettlement partners, people who both help refugees prepare for the workforce in the United States and work with local employers to support that process of hiring refugees and helping with communication and helping them get started in their jobs. A lot of refugees work in the hospitality industry, work in food or meat processing facilities, and there are many employers who are extremely appreciative of refugee workers. They're people who have a strong work ethic, strong family ethic, and they make for great workers that help businesses prosper.
I would add that right now the LCMS is considering a special grant to LIRS and one of our recognized service organizations out on the East Coast. I believe it's Family Services of Pennsylvania or Lutheran Social Services of Pennsylvania, who has a very robust mentoring program. Mm-hmm. And we're looking potentially to give a grant there to not only expand that mentoring program, but really to encourage the participation of Lutheran congregations in that area to be a part of that. But at the last board meeting, we had sort of some role play about mentoring and heard from a gentleman, a businessman, quite successful, who has mentored several immigrants and refugees. I actually had a husband and wife there who had been mentored by him. They, of course, shared just this glowing story of all that he did for them. And when it was his time to talk, he basically said, whatever little good I did for them, I received just so much more for myself. And how much he loves doing this and what a great opportunity it is just to take kind of basic skills and knowledge he knows about the business world and help share those in this long welcome with refugees and immigrants who are there. So I think things like mentoring programs that, again, as Tara said, LIRS is helping to do that with the help of lots of other social service RSO mm-hmm. providers, but congregations and our individual members can be a part of that process.
Tara, you mentioned earlier that learning English can be an important part of this transition as well. Some may have some basic English skills before coming to the United States, but some may have quite a bit yet to learn. Is this a way that congregations can be supportive, offering English language programs?
Absolutely. The need for English proficiency courses and tutors outpaces what's available. So any church that can offer an ESL program, whether it's classes or tutors, is desperately needed.
And there are great resources to make that happen. That was sort of our congregation's first foray when I was serving in Houston, Texas, into sort of immigrant refugee work. Was we had students in the school from about 23 countries of the world, and dads, for the most part, who were coming to work, petrochemical, banking, mm-hmm. at embassies and the like, spoke very fluent English. Many times the moms who were at home and were trying to help their children do homework, and the kids knew English, but moms didn't. So we had a deaconess there who was fluent in about three languages, and we started teaching ESL classes, mainly for the parents of children who were in our school. But as soon as word gets out in the community that you're teaching ESL and it's uh-huh. free, well, I mean, the people just came. And you already have great resources like Good News Magazine, uh-huh. which is translated into, I don't know, a couple dozen languages now. So there's actually good religious information, good Lutheran content mm-hmm. that you can use as part of ESL. And Deaconess Oberzat would oftentimes share with us that she was amazed that teaching a basic ESL class with no sort of intent to, like, proselytize people, she built relationships, and this is exactly what happened. She had all kinds of very natural opportunities to share the gospel with people, and they started coming to our congregation, and this is how the Lord grows the church.
Sure. got a simple opportunity to teach English, as you say, good resources to use to teach English, such as religious material or just simple publications like that, like you said, Good News Magazine, things like that, that are easy to follow, that are translated into other languages if they want to read it in their own language. But to be able to sit down and have simple conversations, I know International Student Ministry here in St. Louis and other places does just that very thing, and that's how those relationships are built, just by having a conversation. And think about how many Sundays after church with coffee, people standing around talking and visiting just because we like to talk.
Right.
How simple is that?
Pretty easy. And, but we are Lutherans, so sometimes we make very easy things quite hard.
But just the fact that you can just, by being a language partner and having a conversation with someone, that's the best way to learn the language. I remember learning languages in college, and sure, you can sit down with a textbook and study it, and you can learn, yes, the proper way to write English and to read English, but to speak it. That takes practice, and that happens through real conversations. Now, I know you were in Texas before, so was it Texas English or North?
Yes.
So English language programs, ESL programs, certainly can be one way that congregations can be neighborly and welcome refugees. Other things, any other ideas Tara, that you can think of?
Sure. I mean, our resettlement partners across the country are also in constant need of furniture to set up apartments for arriving families, bicycles so people can get to school and work, shoes. There are lots of little things that can be done that supports the ongoing work. It's also great to remember that there are people in immigration detention who, as we mentioned earlier, are for all intents and purposes refugees but seeking protection once they arrive in the United States. Our process in the United States means that as soon as they ask for asylum, when they enter the countries at Border and Customs Patrol, will be placed in immigration detention immediately. This is a lonely, scary place for someone who's come to our country for freedom. So volunteers can actually visit with people in detention. It can help them with their English, help them get to know U.S. culture, and just be a compassionate listener for them during what can be a really long and scary process.
I can imagine. How long did you say some may be in detention?
It can be months. In some cases, it's years.
Wow.
One of LIRS's goals is to make sure that people who don't really need to be in immigration detention, people who are not a flight risk, who are not a security risk, are able to be released, and that's usually due in part to the community services that, mm-hmm. that are available, making sure people have a place to live and some help to get on their feet. So making sure those people are released so that they can pursue their asylum case or whatever immigration proceedings they're in, can pursue that in freedom and in dignity.
Well, with the Refugee Sunday coming up, which is Sunday, June 22nd is the official day. What is included in this Refugee Sunday kit that going out to congregations and pastors?
The kit includes some great stuff for worship and for discussion, simple things that can be woven into a service that was probably planned weeks ago already, or can inspire a new activity or new event sometime during the year. Each kit opens with a letter that was co-signed by both President Matt Harrison and LIRS's CEO, Linda Hartke. And then there's a reflection activity for leaders to learn a little bit more and to help guide them as they lead an activity. Their worship ideas, including hymns from the Lutheran Service Book. And then there's a discussion activity that can take place in Bible class or with a school group. There is an ask for support in the kit. We do hope that congregations prayerfully consider contributing to ministry with migrants and refugees. There's also an educational poster in there. There's immigration in general is incredibly complex, as well as the journey of a refugee. So we've shared some facts about the refugee journey and some stories about refugees, and I really hope to see that on a lot of bulletin boards and congregations across the country as we just share about the good work that's being done. And there's also a bulletin insert, of course, a bulletin insert master that people can copy and put in to the bulletin. And online, once people register, they can access even more materials. There are sermon notes written by the Reverend John Nunes that are absolutely wonderful. It's almost a shame that they're on paper. I want to hear him saying these words from a pulpit someday. So there's even more online for people to plan their own celebration or their own educational activity that makes sense for their congregation.
Reverend Day, your thoughts on the Refugee Sunday kit. How is this useful to congregations? What can we do with it? What would you do with it if you were a pastor in a serving a congregation?
Yeah, Tara covered everything in the kit, which is great. A lot of people do have their service planned. Mm-hmm. LCMS folks are, for the most part, liturgical folks and don't go celebrating any Sundays of the year as special. So I understand that not everybody wants to preach the sermon or, you know, sing the hymns or use the litany that's suggested in things. But even basic things like prayer on that day that are included in there that can be shared with the congregation. I think my hope is that the most powerful part of the kit will be these other resources. Take time in Bible class, use those materials, go on the LIRS website. There's some videos and other things. Even the resources, and Tara can share about these too, that are still there and available from LIRS.org that are from the human trafficking campaign that the Synod did with them kind of in 2010 and 2011. All of these, you know, pieces of immigration or refugee services and the issues that surround those folks, if we can have those conversations in Bible class, if you can have it with high school kids, we're going to send all the kids to Lutheran high schools with the hope, you know, they'll be on break, but that this may be something that they will talk about during the school year. What is the system in the United States? How is the system working? How is the system not working? How do they engage as high school students? And I think the same thing for congregations. Find forums where your congregation is comfortable having the conversation and the discussion about refugees and immigrants, and how the church is involved, and more importantly, why can the church be involved?
I know every pastor or every congregation should have received the kit, or they're on the way out now.
I believe the kits are just on their way right now. Is that right, Tara?
Yes, they dropped in the mail at the beginning of this week.
So in the next week or two, every congregation of the LCMS should be receiving a kit.
So if you're listening, you could ask your pastor about that kit and what you can do this summer or in the coming months to learn more about refugees. In addition to Refugee Sunday, Tara, any other ideas of what congregations can do to learn how they could be involved with LIRS and supporting and welcoming these new Americans?
Absolutely. As Bart mentioned, there's a lot of information, including videos on the website, LIRS.org. And another way is to actually talk to somebody who has been a refugee or an asylum seeker. Invite them to speak at a Bible class or a special event. LRS can help make that connection with former migrants and refugees or staff from our partners who can talk about what this work looks like on a day-to-day basis.
So you can, by going to the website lirs.org, find those connections, make those connections, and so you can find a new American in your community, someone that, mm-hmm. that's gone through that process, get in touch with them and learn from them about that, their experience, and then what was most helpful to them, what might be helpful to others.
Yeah, absolutely. And people can contact LIRS directly to help make that connection. I have a wonderful colleague, Matt Hertzberg, who's our manager for congregational outreach. And anybody can get a hold of him with the email address outreach@lirs.org. And he will help with your Refugee Sunday activities, including finding a speaker.
Very good. Any final thoughts as we wrap up our time this morning, Tara? Have we covered everything about Refugee Sunday?
I think we have about Refugee Sunday. There's one aspect of LRS's service that we didn't touch on too much that I just want to make sure we add. Everything we've said about refugees and asylum seekers and the dangers they face, this is also true for, sadly, this is also true for children on their own. And LRS helps these kids in some cases by reuniting them with family, and in some cases by putting them in specialized foster care. Right now, we are receiving more referrals of these children from the federal government than there are families to place them with. I really pray that as part of Refugee Sunday and ongoing conversations about welcoming new Americans, that Lutheran families prayerfully consider becoming a foster family.
That's a great opportunity. Reverend Bart Day, final comments?
We're just glad that people will celebrate the 75th anniversary, and we would encourage them to use the kit, ask questions, have the conversation, and find out how they as a congregation or as individuals can be involved.
Well, we've been talking with Reverend Bart Day, Executive Director of the Office of National Mission for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod and LIRS Executive Committee Member at Large. Pastor Day, thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you for having me on again. It's always great.
Tara Mulder, LIRS Director for Marketing and Communications. Tara, thanks so much for being our guest on Faith and Family. It was great to talk with you today.
Thank you.
Well, coming up next, we've got Moments of Assurance right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.